So did you look at this thing I sent you about brutalist architecture?
No, brutalist architecture?
Yeah, it's
Is that
a
like stuff that looks like the Metalocalypse van and
No, sort of. It's the name of the architecture from the like 40s and 50s that a lot of government buildings are, like most FBI buildings and a lot of courthouses and a lot of government buildings. I just love that government buildings are made of brutalist architecture. It makes
brutalist.
sense.
Wow, that makes so much sense. Well, why do they call it brutalist? Is there
Look
something
it up on
else behind
Wikipedia
it?
while we're chatting about it here. Brutalist architecture. It is so brutal. It is. I'd say Crocodile is pretty brutal. You know, those pictures were pretty brutal. They were rough pictures, man.
Brutalist architecture is a style of architecture which flourished from the 50s to the 70s, spawned from the modernist architectural movement. Critics find it unappealing due to its cold appearance, projecting an atmosphere of totalitarianism.
Yeah, they're buildings that are supposed to scare the pee out of you when they take you there to, you know, make you do the state's bidding.
Okay, and here's the etymology of the term. British architects Allison and Peter Smithson coined the term in 1953 from the French béton, brut, or raw concrete. So,
yeah, brut means something different in Europe. I had a girlfriend from Switzerland who spoke Italian, who used to, when I would like burp or something, she'd call me, she'd say brut, which I don't know if that was French or Italian, but I think it's the same root word. But like, you know, brute in that sense of the word doesn't mean people who stab kittens. It means, you know, someone who's uncouth and unrefined.
Yeah.
Brut.
Yeah.
There used to be a cologne.
Yeah,
there was
like
a men's cologne
concrete.
Called Brut, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think there still is.
Hey Lou, woof, this is Mr. Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster, coming to you on Freedom Fiends live, and over there on the other end of the inner tubes, who do we have and what is your wrestling name, Titanium Meerkat?
This is Lou Sander Fiend, hands up, don't shoot.
Yeah, you're the Titanium Meerkat, broadcasting from the failed state project of Detroit. And you went out and bought some big boy audio gear today, or at least some little big boy audio gear. And we were going to set it up, but you didn't have one of the cables. And so you're going to set it up. We're going to set it up tomorrow, and you're going to be live from the Midwest Peace and Liberty Conference this weekend with some good gear. And yeah, I told you should just go into, you know, there are no music stores that are open 24/7 where you live. So I said, well, you should just go into Detroit and break into some rapper's house and get the cables you need. Because we have to talk about the non-aggression principle. So yeah, it makes it okay. Is that right? No.
And that is a good way to get shot. I don't feel like getting turned into a number two pencil.
That's a good way to get shot more than once. Like, you know, they shoot you, they kill you, they prop you up at their party and put a cigarette in your mouth, and then a few hours later shoot you again just for kicks, I think.
Well, I probably already have the cigarette in my mouth, but they probably kill people, resurrect them, and then kill them again. I saw some of those gangster movies where they use that voodoo stuff.
I've been watching The Wire again, all the way through, and I just love it, and I just it's one of the best TV shows ever made, and it's so... So last exit to Brooklyn. I think that, you know, Cubby Selby, and actually he was alive during the first season of it. So hopefully he got to see some of it because it is not only inspired by him, but it's like co-created by Richard Price, who was, you know, felt he owed such a great debt to Hubert Selby that at one point in his life when, you know, Selby, this great writer, was starving in LA, Richard Price sent him a check for $10,000. That's not public knowledge. That's something I learned from talking to people who knew him when I was making that movie about him. But yeah, man, it's basically like Last Exit to Brooklyn, you know, in Baltimore in the current time rather than in Brooklyn in the 50s. It's the same thing, man. Business and unions and prostitution and all sorts of moneyed activities substituting for love. As Michael Silverblatt of Bookworm radio on public radio in San Francisco and LA on one of those KPFA kind of oh communism all the time radio networks was wont to say. And but Lou and I are going to make some beautiful fiends together, and I'm not really here to discuss or further praise The Wire, and I'm not here to bury The Wire, but I will bury. I did bury the lead. We're going to talk about Celine's Law. Now, Lou, is that where it's a rule that you have to sing really bad pop songs that become the theme song to the worst, I mean, the biggest movie ever made?
No, you don't. No, it's a different Celine. It's actually a fictional character, and it's in Robert Anton Wilson's and Robert Shea's Illuminatus trilogy.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Celine, a gentleman anarchist, serves as a mouthpiece for Wilson's libertarian, anarchist, and sometimes completely uncategorizable ideas about the nature of mankind. Celine's laws are outlined in the trilogy by a manifesto titled Never Whistle While You're Pissing. Wilson later goes on to elaborate on the laws in his nonfiction book, Prometheus Rising, and is being inherent. Yeah, or as being inherent consequences of average human psychology. And he has three laws in there, and they're really good. And I learned about this from Ben Stone, backlaker.com. He was talking about this in one of his podcasts early on. And the one that he was talking, the first law was the one that he was talking about. And it's the little caption for it is, national security is the chief cause of national insecurity. You've seen that picture of the SWAT team pointing MP5s at the cat walking on the grass?
Yeah, we used that in Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom.
Yeah, and the title is Paranoia, because everything is terrorism. And this is talking about during the Cold War era. And it says, reflecting on the paranoia of the Cold War, Celine's first law focuses around the common idea that you have to have national security. One must create secret police. Since internal revolutionaries and external foes would make the secret police a prime target for infiltration, and because the secret police would by necessity have vast powers to blackmail and intimidate other members of the government, another higher set of secret police must be created to monitor the secret police. And this goes on and on and on and on until everybody is watching everybody. Or they run out of money.
Like both things happened in the Soviet Union, I would say. You know, it got to the point where, you know, all the little old ladies were spying on their neighbors and feeding stuff to the KGB. And that's pretty much what collapsed the Soviet Union was. It was a combination of two things. It was a combination of, it had nothing to do with Ronald Reagan. He was getting in front of the parade with his tear down this wall, Mr. Gorbachev. It was basically, you know, I would say Bruce Springsteen had a lot more to do with the fall of the Soviet Union than Ronald Reagan did, because...
And Levi Strauss.
Yeah, it was like, you know, smuggled eighth generation, really crappy sounding cassette tapes of Western rock music and, you know, blue jeans. It was basically they wanted capitalism, and they got a taste of it from things smuggled in from the portals through tyranny that we call loopholes and the black market. And we do want to point out, I saw somewhere today, I don't know who said this, somebody sent this to me and said they saw it somewhere, but the title of this episode is the unemployment rate of the black market is 0%. And it's absolutely true, because there's always work, man. That's something I learned too from, well, you know, just life, but also Renew It from watching The Wire. There's always work slanging on the corner or doing whatever, whether it's jeans or crack. But, you know, the two reasons the Soviet Union collapsed were a combination of people wanting freedom and a lack of money to pay the soldiers. You know, it was just getting to the point where, like, the thing fell apart. And it was on its way out anyway. You know, Robert Anton Wilson, I really like him a lot. I named my band Right Arm of Wyoming, R.A.W., after Robert Anton Wilson, R.A.W. And he's a very influential person to me, but I really couldn't read the Illuminatus trilogy. It was too lysergic soaked for me to make it through, really. I'm too square.
The Soviet Union and East Germany and just and the entire Eastern Bloc, They didn't have enough money to pay for the police state that they wanted to have. And a police state like that is so absolutely you can't sustain the darn thing. And when you're watching every single person thinking that, you know, behind every bush is a capitalist trying to jump out. And in a lot of cases there were, but you get so paranoid that you wind up having to shoot everybody. And the same thing happened here with the Red Scare during the McCarthy era. But there actually were a bunch of Reds in the U.S. government. There still are. They never got rid of them.
You were you were born into the tail end of the Cold War. What year were you born?
1970, but I'm only 29 years old.
So you remember the Red Scare, but you probably don't remember duck and cover drills in grade school, huh?
No, when I was in grade school, we didn't have the magic desk that would protect you from a nuclear blast, even though everything else would disintegrate.
Yeah,
but I was in Germany when the wall came down.
Yeah, I was in Germany when on Reunification Day, which was 9 months after when the wall came down. There were still chunks of the wall up, but you know it was a very porous structure by that point. Yeah, so I want to talk about Selene's Laws with you, but I also want to talk at some point tonight about, I guess it's how kind of sick I am of the whole question of, you know, the non-aggression principle questions that basically boil down to how much aggression can dance on your head on a pin or something. You know, these things of, I really get tired of it, of the thin versus thick, of the, is it a violation of the non-aggression principle if you're, you know, driving the getaway? Yeah, of course it is. You know, if driving the getaway car in the murder, it really has no bearing on my life. And I kind of feel like it's an important thing for people to do when they first get into liberty. But whenever I see somebody having a discussion like that on the internet, I'm kind of like, ugh, this, you know, this is kindergarten. I'm in grad school. You know, if you want me to come in and lecture for a minute and then leave, turn on the fiends, because I'm not going to sit around and take questions, because you're going to argue with me because you're newly minted and you don't understand it. And I'm not bashing newly minted libertarians. I just think that anybody who's seeking liberty is good in my mind. It's kind of like AA, how like no matter how messed up somebody is, when they come in the door, if they want to get sober, you shake their hand, you give them a cup of coffee, you give them your phone number, and you know, you offer to take them out afterwards and chat, program with them, and programming. And I kind of feel like that about liberty. Like it's I don't know. I talked the other night about this, about how when I was in AA, and I'm still sober, but I haven't gone to meetings in a long time, but I still practice those 12 steps in all, you know, in my daily life. And I was never good at reciting the 12 steps word for word or anything from the book word for word. And there were people who like became kind of book thumpers in AA, and they, you know, they had charisma and they could rattle it off. And people liked them for that. That meant you were good. As long as you were sober and you could do that, you're even better. And I could never like rattle it off like that. I still right now could not rattle off the 12 steps word for word. I could tell you what each of them means and how I'd work them into my life. But, you know, and I told the story about how I had this good friend who relapsed when I was a few years sober. You know, he relapsed hard. Like he was shooting heroin, smoking crack. He lost his job, his girlfriend, his, you know, my roommate and I used to have a joke about like relapsing if you're in recovery, like the phone company should have this service for recovering addicts where if you stick a needle in your arm, like as soon as you pull the needle out, your phone rings and it's like a recording from the phone company saying that your service has been cut off. Cause it's almost that immediate, you know, when you've been down that far and you get some clean time and then you go back out, it's like you're trying to make up for lost time. And and really what it is you're trying to like numb the truth in your head, because you know that this will kill you after a few meetings. You know that you can't lie to yourself anymore, and it takes more to like numb you out. But my friend that was relapsed could recite every word of the 12 steps and whole pages from the book high. Didn't help him.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
The Freedom Fiends. And yeah, we are aware that we're having a little bit of interneting problems, but Lou says it's because of all the live streaming happening from Ferguson. They're stealing our interwebs. And I'm sure that a lot of people in America think that if we had net neutrality, that wouldn't happen. But in fact, net neutrality is a plan of the devil and of Barack Obama and his ilk. And they're all socialists, liars, and their feet stink. And net neutrality is a plan to get young people to agree to a more regulated internet that will be harder to use, less available, and more expensive. But we're talking about laws, and we're talking about Selene's laws, which are written from by Robert Anton Wilson in his Illuminatis trilogy. And they're not laws like laws to live by, like the non-aggression principle or the golden rule. They are laws of nature, he purports, he suggests, you know, in the sense of like Newton's laws of physics. So go back to, let's do some more on Selene's first law, which is that the national security, this is interesting. Lou says he can't hear anything. I don't know why that is. Lou, did you button? Can you hear anything? It went out for a few seconds after the music. Are we still connected? I don't know. Let's see. Mr. Bordop, have we lost internets? Are you there? Hello.
I'm there. Carry on.
Hey, carry on. Yeah, man. I don't know where Lou is, but we're going to talk about Selene's laws of physics of the world. I'm going to try to get Lou back. Because Lou, I was throwing to Lou. I threw him the ball. Are you there, Lou?
Yo.
Ah, there you are. Yeah, man, those internets. We need the net neutralities. We need Barack Obama to protect us with his laws. So we're talking about Selene's first law. Go, Lou. Lou, 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 Lou. Lou, 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 Lou. Hello, Lou. All right, I'm just going to read Selene's laws here. Reflecting the paranoia of the Cold War, Selene's first law focuses around the common idea that to have national security, one must create a secret police. There you are. Lou, you got me?
Yeah, I got you.
Oh, yeah. Obama.
Welcome back.
Obama walked on my mixer. Okay, so I was reading Selene's law, first law. You go with Selene's first law, please.
Okay. The best way to describe Selene's law is who's going to watch the watchers. And when we look at like what's going on in Ferguson, and incidentally, I think it is all the live streaming out of Ferguson that messed up our internet.
Yep.
When you look at what's going on and people say there needs to be more police accountability. Okay. Let's have something called an internal affairs division. Meaning we're going to have watchers that watch the watchers. And incidentally,
the band MDC, who it stood for millions of dead cops. See, here's the thing. It's like, you know, I'm not into that idea, but it's also such nothing new to me. Like, I've been listening to punk rock since 1981 by bands called, not only listening to, but like was downstairs neighbors of the band Millions of Dead Cops. You know, this isn't a new concept to me. People are all like, whoa, we need to talk about this. No one's ever talked about this. And MDC were like stone cold socialist communists, man. And they talked about it. But so they had a song that was talking about police accountability. And the line was, it's like sending the rats to guard the cheese.
Right. Well, most of the cops that wind up in the Internal Affairs Division or Infernal Repairs, they got caught being dirty, and that was their punishment, was to go to what's called the Rat Squad.
Really?
So, yeah. Yeah, it happens quite a bit. And then also
I guess no one would say, when I grow up, I want to be a bureaucrat who watches cops. That just doesn't sound very exciting, you know?
Yeah, but going back to Selene's Law and going back to the police state, okay, you have an Internal Affairs Division, and it's their job to investigate allegations of abuse, which, by the way, the department will have to pay out on if those allegations are founded. So you have a bunch of watchers that are either politically motivated or they're not real bright, whatever it is. They're cops, so they're probably not too bright to begin with. So in order to keep them honest, you need another set of watchers to watch them. And then eventually that
winds up
falling in with the program.
I'm picturing a house of mirrors.
Yeah. Or the Soviet police state. So this whole idea that you can have watchers, it doesn't work because you always need more watchers for the previous watchers.
Yeah.
And we need listeners to listen to the listeners on the Freedom Fiends.
We'll be back right after this. The cat will not walk on the mixer again. Press that button.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, talking with Lusander Fien from the Freedom Fiends. Yeah, technical difficulties. I had a bunch of those today. The ceiling fan in my home office studio, which is very necessary in the summer because it's quieter than the air conditioner and I can run it during the show without hurting the audio, I mean. And it died, and it's like 20 years old. It came with the house. And we went to buy a new one, and I'm getting it put in tomorrow. I would put it in myself. I could do the mechanical, but not the electrical. I do a lot of do-it-yourself stuff, but anything electrical, I hire a guy, because life's too important to me to try to save, you know, 50 or 70 bucks by not hiring an electrician. So we're going to go back to talking about Selene's Law, but we're going to talk about mixers for a second. Lou just got his mixer, which is a Behringer Zenix Q1202 USB, which is going to be really good because he'll have more control over his audio. He can mute when he sneezes or coughs or clears his throat. And it has a little one-knob compression on it, and it's the same one-knob compression that's on my big Zenix Behringer board. And in lieu of outboard better, you know, tunable preamp, tube, compressor, limiter, EQs, it does help a lot. If you have a clean signal, it will make you sound less excitable. Not less excitable, but when you get excited and you get really loud, it won't be crunchy the way it is with Lou. Lou gets really excited. So are you excited about Selene's Law?
Oh, yeah. I'm just like so excited.
Well, tell us how the world works. What is Selene's first law? Are we done with that and going on to the second law?
We covered the first one. The second law, I'm just going to touch on it a little bit. It's about speaking truth to power. And the little quote on here is, accurate communication is possible only in a non-punishing situation. So imagine that you have to tell your boss that something's messed up. So, you know, you don't want to tell your boss that he or she screwed something up, and you have to find a way to do it. And basically it means soft pedaling it or just flat out, you know, BSing and saying, oh yeah, everything's fine while everything's on fire. So it's not a real big thing, but imagine if you're a cop and you finally cross the thin blue line and you go and you tell your boss, hey, my cop buddy out here, he's dirty. Not that cops really cross the thin blue line, because you know they're real good about going after dangerous offenders like drug dealers, cartel members, and all that sort of stuff.
They like to go after people that aren't really criminals, because they're safer to bust than real hardcore criminals who are committing real hardcore, profitable, real crimes. And even with the nanny crimes, with drugs, they'd rather go after the college student buying a joint on his way home or, you know, selling some out of his apartment than go after the cartel leader who has an army behind him that's composed of people he recruited from the army because he pays better.
Well, when you hear the cops talk about it, they put their life on the line daily going up against these cartel leaders. But for some reason, they're afraid to cross the thin blue line and put their life on the line to put away a bad cop.
Yeah.
The movie Serpico is a perfect example of it.
It's a documentary.
It. Yeah. He wouldn't take graft, so he winds up getting shot. And even the so-called good cops treat him like a pariah for turning on his boys in blue.
You know, that movie, I think, was the first of that kind. That movie was before Dirty Harry. You know, it was the first of, like every cop movie before that, the cops were just black. You know, everything was black and white. The cops were all pure heroes and kind of cartoon characters. You're like, oh, you dirty rats, you got me. You know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And after Serpico, which I think was 1970 or 71, it introduced something into cop movies, which is really why I like cop movies, why they're my secret shame, is like everyone's kind of morally ambiguous. It's blurring the line of good and evil. It shows dirty cops, even the so-called good cops, you know, make moral mistakes and, you know, do dirty things for good, or are just being dirty on the side. You know, and this is me talking from wearing a minarchist hat, which I have to do. You know, I realized today my anarchiversary is coming up. I'm coming up on 4 years, 4 years as a full-on no government man, because they have the elections every 4 years for governor in the state of Wyoming, and they just had the Republican primary again. And Nima Vadadi and I interviewed the guy who won again. Of course, they're putting him in again, even though he's not a liberty. He's not the liberty guy he claims to be. But they just had the primary, and Nima Vadadi went out and filmed him and the other Republicans shooting at a gun range 4 years ago for the Republican primary. And you know, like right after that, like days after that, I just finally went, you know, it was the fact that like that guy seemed so like a defender of liberty, and then he got elected, and then Nima tried to interview him again like 2 weeks later, and the guy was like, get away from me, kid, you bother me. Like, he didn't have any use for him anymore, and he didn't want to talk about the liberty issues at all, you know, because he knew in this state, if you win the Republican primary, pretty much is the general election in Wyoming. So
kind of like the Democratic primary in Baltimore on the wire.
yeah, exactly. I think they say that in there too. Yeah, I think they say the primary is the general election. So go on.
Let's move on to Selene Sirdlaw. And since you brought that up about the guy who claims to govern you, and I don't know when my anniversary is. I just don't know the date, and I also do not have a rebirth certificate to verify it.
I'm sure Davy Barker could print one up for me. He does have not badges, but buttons, you know, like the audio one you're talking about, the Pork Scout badges. He has one for speaking truth to power also, speaking of Selene's laws.
Okay. With the third law, an honest politician is a national calamity.
Yeah.
And the reason for this, and this ties into that C.S. Lewis quote that I love so much, the honest politician in his efforts to solve problems will enact all sorts of laws, freedom laws, in order to try and make things better. And as Ludwig von Mises stated, each new intervention is an attempt to clean up the mess of the previous interventions. So, well, I kind of changed it around. I don't think he would have used that language, but...
Well, Ron Paul is proof that an honest politician is a national calamity, because he's the only one there's ever been. And I still don't like the idea of politicians, but I kind of got a kick out, and I still get a kick out of the fact that there was one in the history of all the thousands of politicians in America and the world. There was one that like followed the rules that were presented to him by his job description and, you know, wanted less laws and wanted more liberty. And, you know, it was a calamity. I mean, the GOP didn't know what to do with him, and they basically changed their rules. You know, they disenfranchised his followers pretty much.
The real calamity is there are still some of his followers that have hope for that horrible, putrid system.
And that, because, and that creepy, putrid son of his.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I can't stand Rand. Oh, he's filthy. But Selene argues that creating more laws simply creates more criminals. Laws inherently restrict individual freedom, and the explosive rate at which laws are being created means that every citizen in the course of his daily life does not have the research capacity to not violate at least one of the plethora of laws. It is only through honest politicians trying to change the world through laws that true tyranny can come into being without excessive through excessive legislation. And he says that you're better off with robber baron politicians that just skim off the top and are concerned with enriching themselves. It's the ones that really want to help you that you have to watch out for.
Yeah, you know, this book came out in 1975, and a lot of these things that make up Selene's three laws, I have heard parroted to me at various times, many times over, by newly minted libertarians who talk like they just invented it and are just feeding it to me. Like almost word for word, and a lot of them I'll bet have never heard of Robert Anton Wilson. Like this stuff just kind of gets filtered through, and I'd say he's one of the great unsung, not heroes, not great men. I don't like those ideas, but you know, one of the great writers and thinkers of liberty. And you know, most people, there's people that like him that don't even know what libertarianism is per se. You know, he's just a great sci-fi writer or something. But yeah, he kind of laid down. You know, Lysander Spooner laid it all down over 100 years ago, 130 years ago. But this is kind of some of the more modern, you know, Lysander Spooner came up with the what we call the aggression principle, which is the opposite of the non-aggression principle, which is the explanation of the gun in the room, the gun to the head behind every law. But yeah, some of this stuff in here is really solid and gets parroted a lot, man.
I still think that it should be called the full aggression principle.
The FAP?
Yes.
Yeah, I like that too. I asked you what you were doing before the show, and you said that you were going to initiate the full aggression principle in yourself.
Yeah, well, and usually I take a nap in between getting home from work and doing the show, but I didn't take a nap, so it's going to be one of those long, tired nights and all that other stuff, but yeah. But I really don't know, because with Ron Paul giving so much false hope to people, because there are still people that are saying, oh yeah, we're gonna do it this time. It's like Charlie Brown thinking he's gonna kick that football, and you know, these people that are running for office with the idea that they're gonna create freedom laws and make us more free, and you know, it's. They're going out there and rather than just being the robber barons that they should be and just taking money and enriching themselves and then leaving everybody alone, they're going to go out and they're going to torment everybody because their own conscience allows them to do it.
Wasn't
their own libido dominandi allows them to do it, and they will sleep like kittens at night.
Meow. Is it, kittens don't necessarily sleep at night. They sleep all day. Cats sleep all day so they can save up energy to dance over your bed while you're sleeping.
You know, I saw a video not too long ago. It says what your cats do while you're asleep. And they show the cats going to sleep with you. And then, like, as soon as you're zonked out, they're flying all over the place and they're doing all kinds of stuff.
Is that a line drawing animated cartoon?
No. It was on Big Cat Rescue. Lions and tigers like catnip, too.
Wow. That's a scary thought. Nipped up lion. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends.
So much truth, it hurts.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateurs, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
It's Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend. Talking to Lou Sanders Fiend. Lou has something he wants to say about a piece of equipment that he thinks taxpayers should pay to buy for police.
Actually, no, I don't. There's an article in the Wall Street Journal, and I've seen this meme all over Face Space. In Rialto, California, the police are wearing body cameras or like lapel cameras or something like that. And they claim that in the first year of usage, that use of force by officers has declined by 60% and citizen complaints against police has fallen 88%. Why is the amount of violence dropped by 60% and the complaints dropped by 88%? It's kind of like there's a correlation equals causation here. I don't know how they're measuring this, but and I'm just going to say this right now. If you have to put cameras on your cops to keep them from being thugs, they probably shouldn't be cops in the first place.
It's also an inordinate statistic. I mean, what was the drop in reports of violence? Or
60% decrease in use of force.
If there was something in private industry that cost $160, which is, I read on Police One, that's what the Taser company sells their body cameras to police agencies for in bulk. If there was something that cost $160 that would reduce, you know, lawsuits by 60%, it would be like mandatory in an industry within the industry, or it would be, you're crazy if you're not using that. Like, you know, think about if retail stores had something that they could buy that's $160 for a small retail store that would drop the likelihood of lawsuits by 60%, they would be lining up to buy it. But not all police are on board with this. A surprising number are, though. We actually last night, Ian Freeman and Davi and I read a Police One, which is a police, only police can post on it forum. Anybody can read it, but only police can, they have to prove like facts from their, you know, sergeant or something that proves that they're police to get an account on there. I have a theory, and I want to get this on record more than once, which is that I think in the next year, Police One is going to make it so only police can read that site, because I don't think they like, you know, that they're
people seeing what they're actually writing and yeah, what kind of criminals they are.
Yeah. But I was actually surprised. It seemed like about 60% of the people replying on that thread, which doesn't mean 60% of cops, were in favor of wearing body cameras. But the 40% that were against it were absolutely against it. They thought it would get in the way of doing their job and which, you know, to me says their job involves doing things that they don't want seen. And one of the complaints was interesting. They said, you know, if a lot of agencies start using these, this will become the standard thing that's asked for in all trials, the way that DNA is now in murder trials or rape trials. And I'm like, duh, what's wrong with that? You know?
Well, let's take a little shot at this here. Okay, so body cameras are going to stop cop violence and stop complaints against the cops. Okay, why didn't dash cameras reduce violence? Now, well, you remember that video of that guy getting shot up in Albuquerque for camping on state land? Yeah. That was shot from a helmet cam. There's a guy in, I think it was Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. He got shot up by the cops, and that was filmed on a body cam.
I don't think
it's not going to reduce it. This is great object worship, not great man worship. Yeah, great object.
Yeah, I think it's it's like putting a Band-Aid on cancer. But I'm in favor of it. I would like to see it everywhere.
I'm not.
Why? Well, here's a problem too. Here's an unintended consequence I could see if it becomes, you know, the normal everywhere for every cop to wear a body camera. They will probably outlaw us filming them because they'll say, you don't need to film us. We're filming it.
Well, of course the footage will get lost like it does now, but there's a couple of reasons. I'll cover them when we get back. Second hour. Right.
Cool. We're also going to talk about newly minted libertarianism and how to not sound like you're a member of a cult if you just became a libertarian or an ANCAP or a libertarian ANCAP and still want to like have relationships with the rest of the world. We might also talk about the new website, Defu Molyneux, whatever that means. Defu Molyneux. Worms.
Be right back.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting loud and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural, wild Mountain West in the occupied states of America. This is hour two of our talk radio musical extravaganza. Are you there, Lusander Fiend?
I am here, my brother.
Are you safe? Are you well? Are you safe?
Worms.
Good.
I've not been contacted by the government.
So before we talk a little bit more about cop cameras, cameras on cops, I just want to say one thing. This is to the listener. Don't write to people and CC them. Don't write to me and CC somebody that you think I should interview and say, you should interview this guy. He's great. Blah, 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 blah. Because we're not an interview show. We're, this is like our 270th episode, somewhere around there. And no, wait, 470. We're coming up on, nearly 500 episodes. And I would say 20 to 25 of our episodes have been interviews. And so it's really rare, man. And most of those were with NEMA. Even less of those have been since in the post-NEMA era. So it's really not an interview show. And you just end up putting me on the spot and embarrassing your friend when you do that. It's not good form, man. It's kind of like writing, you know, writing someone you sort of know who owns a company and CCing someone who's looking for a job and saying, you should hire this guy. I mean, it's not as big of a thing as that, because it might be. I mean, some people consider a radio interview like as life-changing as a new job. It's not, but at least on this show. But a lot of people think it is. But yeah, man, don't do that. That's all I got to say. So, Lou, tell me about cameras.
Cameras. Okay, there's this idea that body cams are going to reduce cop violence. And as I said earlier, if dashboard cameras and the body-mounted microphones didn't do it, then why should we expect the body cams to do it?
Well, I agree that it's not going to make all cops good and honest, because even if cops never beat people up and never shot people who weren't trying to kill them and only did their job, they'd still be, bad in our eyes because the laws are bad. But
yes,
even so, even if you consider a cop not beating people up and just, enforcing the laws as written in an honest way, if you consider that the goal, which is not far enough of a goal by far, if you consider that the goal, body cameras aren't going to get you there. But here's the thing, to play devil's advocate, they're on the cop, so they're going to be with him more than a dashboard cam that's only on the car and only pointing forward.
Yeah, but look at all the store surveillance cameras that are out there. I mean, Kelly Thomas got the living snot beat out of him, and that was on video camera with sound.
Yeah,
so you could hear him screaming for his daddy, and cameras didn't stop it.
A big problem of thinking that cop body cameras are going to solve things is the misunderstanding the fact, ignoring the fact that cops can pretty much do anything they want to people and usually get away with it.
Right, because they'll go to the internal investigation, and who wants to speak truth to power?
Yeah. But I'd be willing to bet that the cop that shot that kid in Ferguson ends up convicted of something, because it's that kind of thing where it's like the law doesn't matter, the due process, as if there's such a thing, doesn't matter. And I think if they don't convict this guy, I think the people involved in deciding whether or not he gets convicted, which is not the jury, I think those people are afraid of, L.A. style riots nationwide.
He'll be the sacrificial rodent.
Right. Yeah. They'll throw him under the bus and back it up and drive forward and back up a few times.
I saw the other day some reasons why we should not be supporting the body cams. One, which is kind of a minor thing.
You lost me at we, but go on. I'm kidding.
You and me.
Yeah.
Okay. And then anybody else said,
all right, because I said in the first hour that I support them. I'm in favor of them. And what I meant was I'm in favor of them with an asterisk. I kind of just want to see cops, squirm at the idea of accountability, but apparently, according to the Police One site, only 40% of them from a random sampling on that post would be squirming.
Yeah, well, one, it does discourage people from recording the cops because they assume that there is a video record of their interaction and that it's not going to get lost somewhere. The really big one that made me shy away from it was, if you have a cop with a video camera and whenever you post a picture on Facebook, it'll ask you automatically, would you like to tag so-and-so because of all that facial recognition? Just imagine, let's say for the Tea Party conservative types, let's imagine that you're at the Tea Party rally or you're at the meeting and maybe the cop is walking through there and he's got his lapel camera. And, maybe he also has audio on there and he picks up the conversations. He could stand kind of close to you.
That's a really good point.
And not really pay attention.
That's a really good point. It's a lot more bugging everyone all the time.
Yeah. So people complain about the NSA. People complain about all of the surveillances going on. Here you have just made it possible for a cop to walk through a bar, a restaurant, a tea party rally, a whatever it is that they want to look at people for. Because cops, they are involved in intelligence operations. They collect information on who goes where and who does what. They might not fess up to it, but I saw a video of cops writing down the license plate numbers at a Tea Party rally, and here you have all these Tea Partiers, 50 years old plus, breaking out with their smartphones and recording the cops like they're a bunch of edgy teenagers from Cop Block, which a lot of people in Cop Block are not exactly edgy teenagers. But here they are recording the cops. And these are Tea Partiers who are normally support your local police state types. But for them to have that type of information and with the facial recognition, they can find out and with just a walkthrough what it would take, you know, hundreds of hours of actual intel operations to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that the end of their list or is there more?
I saw a couple others. I'm going from memory on it. Those were the real main ones that popped into my mind that really stayed with me.
I would add to that list my thing, which I haven't heard anybody say. I'm sure someone has thought of it, but it's not out there widely, that if all cops are required to wear body cameras nationwide or in a particular jurisdiction, it's likely that nationwide or in that particular jurisdiction, they will have an easier time outlawing filming the cops because they'll say, hey, you don't need to film. We're filming, man.
I don't know how far that would go. That seems a little bit like a stretch. Where would it go?
It would go to eventually probably to the Supreme Court of the United States of America, the same Supreme Court that ruled, has ruled all sorts of things that are violations of personal liberty, especially lately.
I believe that there's actual Supreme Court precedent to support the filming of cops. I know that circuit courts have reaffirmed it.
Huh. Well, they could always do differently if there was this other option of, you know, Davi was talking last night and it made a lot of sense to me of how I said it's pretty bizarre the things that used to be classified 50 years ago or 40 years ago and aren't now, but the things that are classified now that weren't classified 40 years or 50 years ago, you know, like for instance, in the 60s, like one of the coups of the United States technological warfare departments was being able to, you know, use the U-2 spy plane to get grainy footage of other countries from way high up in the sky. And now, like, you know, you can go on Google and get much higher res color imagery, without having to develop film and without having to pay any money yourself of pretty much every square inch of the earth, except for Dick Cheney's underground blood bank, you know, where they
where he keeps the hamster blood.
Yeah. And what Davi said, and now, you know, the other thing is now like that stuff is all out there. And, you know, encryption was something that in the 60s, if a citizen could get a hold of it, it would be, you'd go to prison because you would have stolen it because, you know, citizens couldn't have it then and it required rooms full of machinery too. But now anybody can have it on their, you know, this little computer in their pocket that costs $300. But now there's been a move lately to over classify things, like to take things that used to be public record, especially at the federal level, and make them top secret or classified or some other rubber stamp designation to where if you get a hold of it or share it with anybody, you're guilty of some very serious federal crimes with a lot of years in prison attached to them. So Davi's response to that was that basically what they've done, the reason, they don't care even that we're on government controlled radio bashing the existence of the idea of the existence of government, not just anything the government does or this party or that party. They don't care because they've kind of removed the ability for anything to like change things in ways they recognize. Like, you can sort of assemble peacefully, but there's a bunch of cops around pointing rifles at you and they've made it so it doesn't change anything. You know, you can try to get your candidate to the federal level to where he's in the debates like Ron Paul. But, the party will take care of it to where he can't get elected. And, you know, the things that they were afraid of in the 60s, like anti-war rallies, because they helped end the Vietnam War, like those things don't end wars anymore. You know, they've kind of tinkered with the formula to where we can think we're having freedoms, but it doesn't really do anything. Although they don't really know what to do with out of left field kind of alien technology, like just the internet in general, cell phones that fit in your pocket and Bitcoin. Those are kind of game changers, but I think we're still kind of waiting to see what the end game of them is.
Well, government always panics over new technology. I went back and I looked at that article of from Bullitt County, Kentucky. I think it was 1909, where the state senator wanted to outlaw devil wagons.
Yeah, cars.
Yeah. He wants somebody to run 100 yards out in front to warn people of a coming engine.
You had to have a pace human if you're going to drive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He wanted to set the speed limit at 3 miles per hour. And he was also worried about the horse and buggy whip industry.
Yeah. That's so square.
100 years later, nothing has changed.
But everything's changed.
Well, people want to go back to when government was smart. It never was.
I know 50 years ago, we would not have been on the radio talking like this. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yeah. We want the airwaves and we want them meow. It's Michael Dean, Freedom Fiends. You know, did you know that Nima Vedati and I invented using the term brutalism for people?
No, I did not.
Yeah, it was about a year before the article by Jeffrey Tucker about brutalist libertarians versus humanitarian? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm either. I think myself and all of the fiends are thin libertarians. You know, basically the only thing is that we care about is the non-aggression principle as far as our political outlook, I guess I'd say. But we care about other things and we have passions and we think that people shouldn't be Richards to each other. But that doesn't mean if you're a Richard, it doesn't mean you're not a libertarian. It just means we don't want nothing to do with you.
But I'm so thin that I make paper look fat.
I'm a fat, thin libertarian. Yeah, I'm chunky, man. I am a chunky monkey. But that's
I'm
okay.
I'm a slightly chubby one.
I'm a chubby monkey because I have suffered for y'all's art. Because I pretty much, since I started doing this show, I put on about 25 pounds. Because I pretty much have been sitting in front of a computer, scratching the world in special places from a distance. And this is a more than full-time job. And we do have an ad space coming up available if somebody wants to advertise inexpensively on the Freedom Fiends. I mean, we're probably the only radio show that's on this many stations, 25 stations, that has three-digit advertising budgets. You know, it's not even in the four digits. So the Michigan Peace and Liberty Festival is coming up this weekend. Lou's going to talk about that a little bit, but we won't be playing that ad after that, and that space is available. So this space for rent, if you want to write us at talkback@freedomfiends.com to buy some advertising space and help offset our operational costs, which was it last year? I did the math on it and figured out I made 45 cents an hour on the Freedom Fiends, working more than full time. Tell us a little bit more about the Michigan Peace and Liberty Festival and how people can go if they haven't gotten tickets yet.
Okay, it's going to be this weekend. It starts Friday at 10 a.m. and it goes until Monday at noon. And it's at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo. So that's the southwest corner of the tax farm. You can go to miplc.org. That's Mike, India, Papa, Lima, Charlie for more information on it. You can't pay online now, but you can still register. And it'd be really nice if we knew who was coming so we can square things up with the site.
And, yeah.
You know, so we know how many garbage cans we need if we need to get some porta potties out there. But anyway, yeah, you can come on out and you can register or sign up or pay at the door. And I'm not sure how much the door charge is going to be. It's probably going to be around $50 per person for adults, give or take. But yeah, it's going to be a very good time. And it's going to be a perfect example of voluntarism. So it, as I've said before, if you're on the fence, you don't know if you want to go with libertarianism or authoritarianism, come on out, take voluntarism for a test drive. If you don't like it, you can always go back to statism.
But you don't get your money back.
Well, just, no. Yeah. But I mean, statism won't give you your money back either. As a matter of fact, it'll keep taking and taking and taking.
So I found the Freedom Fiends episode where Nima Vedati and I invented the term brutalist. I know that we used it for people. I don't know if we used it for libertarians, but we're talking about Lou Rockwell. There was a quote from Lou Rockwell that I don't know if it's true or not. It used to be on his Wikipedia page, and it's not anymore, I don't think, last time I checked. It was basically something about, you know, real libertarians have moral values, like they don't, you know, you can't be a libertarian and like pornography, jazz, and Bauhaus architecture. And I thought that was about the squarest thing I'd ever heard. yeah, I don't know if he actually ever said it, because somebody took it off his Wikipedia page, and it was referencing like a magazine from the 70s. Like, I don't have any way to go find that and see if he really said it, but it seemed very square to me. It also seemed very not thin libertarian, which is kind of funny because he's considered, you know, the ultimate thin libertarian now. Like, yeah, it's all about the non-aggression principle. But if he said that, you know, we were joking about like, well, if he doesn't like Bauhaus architecture, what does he like? Brutalist architecture, brutalist, which is that style that is used for a lot of like FBI buildings. It's really imposing and it's all cement and it's everything's really thick and there's not a lot of windows on it. It's not even form over function. It's like, we will scare you with the form of this building into compliance. It's the kind of building that like you only go to when you have to, and you walk up the steps and it scares you even more. So yeah, we did invent that, but the episode I will post in the show note links. It was called "We Want the Airwaves and We Want Them Meow." And it's from April 4th, 2013. A month before we got on radio, when we knew we were getting on radio, and like, I just couldn't wait. I was burning to get on radio. So we want the airwaves and we want to meow.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, this is Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to The Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And, I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, talking to Lou Sanderfiend, Freedom Fiend, broadcasting from a windowless bunker in the Mountain West and a windowless kitchen in the failed state project known as Detroit. Do you have a window, Lou?
Yeah, it's on the other side of the room. It's actually a door wall to my screened-in balcony.
So you haven't broken it. You don't believe in the broken window fallacy?
No, I do not.
You don't believe that if you break all your windows, you'll become wealthier?
Right. And the city that I live in will not become paved in gold if I if I go breaking windows.
You came up with that, didn't you?
Yes.
Yes. Say the whole thing.
If broken windows created prosperity, the streets of Detroit would be paved in gold.
So true.
And I'm going to find some graffiti that says Keynes was here.
Keynes was here. That would be really funny. I wouldn't recommend doing graffiti, but if someone were to do graffiti, that would be a really funny Yeah, you do it. I wonder if, I'll bet it's a crime to do graffiti on a building that's about to be demolished.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they'd probably cancel the demolition to preserve evidence.
Yeah, they probably would. So we want to talk about newly minted libertarians. We love them. Everyone's got one. Everyone's got a few in their life. And everyone is one at one point. You know, when you go from when the scales fall from your eyes and you finally realize that all government is theft, fraud, and aggression. All taxes are collected at the point of a gun. You know, like realizing that is such a sea change. It's such a mind-blowing experience. It's kind of like, you know, like realize, like someone realizing they're gay, or, you know, like kind of like in the Matrix, you know, when he finally sees the Matrix, when Neo sees what's behind there, or in Wizard of Oz, when you see there's just this little man behind the curtain. You know, it's one of those revelatory things or in AA, like realizing, you know, that you are an alcoholic, and that means, you know, any alcoholic will say in a bar, hey, to alcoholism, and toast it, but they haven't really conceded it to their innermost self, because when you concede to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic, you can't really drink and enjoy it again, because you can drink, people do, but, you know, they try to drink a lot more to like dull the fact that they have realized in their heart of hearts that if they drink, they will do it until they die a lot younger and more miserable than they would if they stop. So, yeah, it's one of those things where it changes the way you see the world, or, you know, for some people taking psychedelic drugs, it changes the way, or getting religion, or joining a cult. It's kind of like all these things, realizing what the aggression principle is and what the non-aggression principle is. And it changes the way you look at everything in life. And people who are newly minted libertarians who've just discovered this ancient truth, or this, you know, modern ancient truth, tend to sound like newly minted recovering alcoholics, or people who just quit smoking and thinks everyone should quit smoking. And, you know, people who just got sober in AA and think everyone needs a 12-step program, even if they're not an alcoholic, because everyone has problems. And these magical steps would cure everyone's problems. And it's, I got to say this, it's really annoying to everyone around you. And you will want to defoo them, and, you know, people like Molyneux will tell you to, and I say defoo Molyneux. I'm done with that guy. I can't take life lessons from somebody that's as nutty as he is lately, because he's suffering from the Molyneux rule, which is that when a pundit gets about 20,000 hardcore listeners, I said 50,000 yesterday, but it's about 20,000 hardcore listeners, They go nuts, or at least lose their internal filters and start saying crazy, crazy stuff that is antithetical to their message, and just saying things as fact that aren't. So, yep, he's gone. I've defooed Molyneux.
Now, I heard somebody called into Stefan's show recently and was complaining about their car constantly breaking down, and Stefan went to explain that his car breaking down was a result of him being abused as a child.
Yeah, that sounds like something that would happen. He does blame everything on that. But defoo Molyneux. That's the new thing, man. I might even make that the name of the episode. But I don't know. I'm kind of done with that guy to the point. I'm kind of done with the guy to the point where, like, I don't want to put a lot of effort into, you know, complaining about him.
He's very good on talking about actual liberty. If you go back to the story of your enslavement, I mean, that is classic libertarianism.
Here's my thing, though. I've heard a lot of people say that lately. Davi was saying that too. Like, he did a great canon. You can just ignore everything he's done for the past year and go back to the canon. And I'm kind of like, I can't really do that. It's kind of like a minarchist. You know, the moment when I realized I couldn't like, Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, because he owned people. Like, I don't care how well he talked about liberty. The guy owned people. And I don't care how sane anybody talks about things when they say crazy stuff other times. You know, I don't want to have to pick and choose. And so the newly minted libertarian problem, I'm not saying there's a problem we need to solve with the newly minted libertarians. I'm saying if you are a newly minted libertarian, or if you know one, you might want to turn them on to this thought, is like, you sound crazy like a cult member, like you're unable to talk to the rest of the world. And long intellectual discussions of, is this violating the NAP? Is this violating the NAP? You know, where people are screaming at each other on Reddit or Facebeef or wherever, or YouTube. That's not really what liberty's about. I mean, I guess it's necessary for some people early on. It was necessary for me very early on to kind of like figure out what I am and what I'm not in liberty. But it's not liberty. And there are people who think, and I know people who are not newly minted libertarians or anarchists who have been this way for like 5 years or 7 years, who still do this all day long. And I'm kind of like, I don't know, man. I mean, I think about like the fiends hanging out at Porkfest. We were there a week. We were, you know, I don't think we mentioned the non-aggression principle once. It's kind of like a fish looking for water. We were soaking in it, man. We were living it. We were like surrounded by unlicensed commerce, living our lives, doing our thing, carrying guns, being around people smoking weed, not caring that they were doing it. And, you know, just, we were soaking in it, man. We didn't need to go looking for it. We didn't need to discuss it.
Yeah, and don't forget the child labor. That was a great thing, too. All those kids making money, hustling waters and dog sitting and everything else. It restored my hope in the youth.
Yeah, I liked
but
it, too.
As far as, like, these newly minted libertarians, I've been involved in some of these online forums and groups and everything, and it's people that have been libertarians for quite a long time, and they're still discussing these absolutely mundane topics. And rather than just discussing and debating it, how about just living it? Libertarianism is like Nike. Just do it.
You know where the just do it motto came from, right?
Gary Gilmore.
Yeah, it was the last words of convicted murderer Gary Gilmore facing the firing squad. They said, do you have any last words? And he said, nah, man, let's... it wasn't just do it. It was let's do it. And that was like the headline in the paper the next day. And the ad agency that was coming up with a slogan for Nike saw that and changed it to just do it.
Yeah. Die Totenhosen did a copy of the song called Gary Gilmore's Eyes, because I guess he donated his eyes after he was executed.
Oh, that's very humanitarian of him.
Yeah. Well, and he was only brutalist in his, you know, other activities.
If I was going to be shot in the firing squad, I would probably donate my organs. Although, yeah, your eyes would be one of the only ones you could, because the other organs would be destroyed by the bullets. But you know, the thing about why I'm not an organ donor is because they do live beating heart cadaver harvesting of organs, which means if you're an organ donor and you're in an accident and you're in a coma, that, you know, people do come out of these things, but if it looks like you're not going to come out of it, yeah, they will keep you alive on a ventilator and cut into you and start taking your organs out. That is horrifying to me. That is like a horror movie. You know, if you had any consciousness at all while it's happening, but even if you don't, just the idea of it is completely wrong to me. Whereas if you're shot in the heart with four 30-06s from, you know, 30 feet away, your heart's not going to be beating. I'd be fine with them taking my eyes in that situation.
Yeah, I would prefer not to be up against a wall, though. I mean, that's just me. I have this attachment to life, you know, because that is the secret of life, not dying. But,
well, if I were setting up that execution or pulling the trigger in it, which, you know, I think the only people that should be able to do that would be the families of the victims. But that's my idea on the death penalty, is it shouldn't be the state. It should be... I don't really like the idea of it, but I'm against it as long as the state has the reins of it. If there were a way to make it absolute only in cases where absolutely the person has done something heinous and there's total proof of it beyond any doubt, not a shadow of a doubt or reasonable doubt, but beyond any doubt, and the families of the victims are pulling the trigger, I think I'd be fine with it. But that was a dangerous situation, because they were... At least in the movie that was made of that situation, they were firing 30-06s, which are like pretty much the, you know, one of the most powerful, you know, assassin sniper rifle cartridges, you know, below the 300 round.
Deer hunting too.
Yeah, deer hunting. I mean, M1 Garands fired those too. You know, they were for killing Nazis at, you know, 100,000 meters away. They were firing that at like, you know, 40 feet probably, in a barn with Gilmore I think he was up against a bunch of bales of hay, and behind that there was a cement wall. That is not safe use of a gun, man, because they can ricochet off a hard surface, and they don't stop, man. In an enclosed area, a powerful rifle bullet, 30 cal rifle bullet, will just bounce off the walls and shred everything in it, and do that, 10 or 12 times.
Yep. And what's really nice, in going back to the deer hunting thing, if you're using a 30-06, like with the smaller calibers, a round will deflect if it hits like a little tiny branch. Just like a twig-like branch, something like in the .223 category will wind up deflecting and going off. But the 30-06 we call it the brush buster because it actually goes through. It doesn't get diverted as easily.
So. Yeah, people have to remember, I'm not saying I would volunteer to be shot with an AR, but the .223, it literally is a .22. It's a .22 on steroids, man. It's a .22 caliber bullet on steroids.
Well, what you need to do is you need to shoot yourself with 22 long rifles so that you can build up a tolerance to the larger rounds.
Yeah, 22 LR in a tiny little handgun is nothing to sneeze at for self-defense carry if you don't want to carry a big gun.
It's a very good round.
What's the other 22 that kind of like really Magnum? 22 Magnum. Yeah, man.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Freedom Fiends. Redemption in the third act. With Lysander Fiend. Lysander's going to... I'm going to pass the mic to my brother, Lysander. Go, sir, go.
All righty. Up next, we have an article from the Washington Post. It's called, "I'm a Cop. If you don't want to get hurt, don't challenge me." What it should have been titled was, "If you hurt my feelings, if you piss me off, or if you refuse to let me dominate you, I will kill you." And this guy is a professor or instructor at the Homeland Security, Nazi training center, whatever it is. But anyway, the whole article really edged me, but the one particular paragraph that really, really, really bothered me is, even though it might sound harsh and impolitic, here is the bottom line. If you don't want to get shot, tased, pepper sprayed, struck with a baton, or thrown to the ground, just do what I tell you. Don't argue with me. Don't call me names. Don't tell me that I can't stop you. Don't tell me I'm a racist pig. Don't threaten that you'll sue me and take away my badge. Don't scream at me that you pay my salary. And don't even think of aggressively walking towards me. Most field stops are complete in minutes. How difficult is it to cooperate for this long? Uh-huh. And, oh my God. No, we don't pay his salary because that money is stolen from us and then redistributed to him because he's a welfare bleep.
Wow. But, how do you really feel?
I used to support and respect cops, but finding out that there are so many that are just like this guy, I can't do it anymore. It's horrible. If you go back to the nonsense that we were taught in junior high school and high school civics class, we are the government. The government is supposed to serve us. And if you have to deal with this, you're not being served. And they're not protecting. They're nothing more than an enemy occupation force, period. And this guy was even in internal affairs. So this is one of those watchers, one of the watchers watching the watchers. So what are they going to do? Are they going to make some laws to rein this guy in, some freedom laws? No. And this guy here, I don't think he cares if he has a camera mounted to his lapel. And, just like Ron Paul giving false hope to people that maybe the system can work, when you hear about putting cameras on cops, that's just false hope that the system can work because the system is inherently corrupt. It's not big government. It's not bad government. It's not Republican or Democrat government. It's just government. Government didn't go bad. It went government. But there is a way to solve all these problems, and it's real simple. end the police state. Don't play around like Rand Paul is talking about with tweaking it. You know, we're going to demilitarize the cops, but we're not going to take their weapons away. We're just going to demilitarize them. No, end it completely. This is not a symptom. This is not a flaw of the system. It is a feature. When you accept that there will be police who enforce the wills and the dictates and force you to bend over to the will of the politicians, this is what you get. Because these guys are the enforcers for their politicians. These are the guys that will kick down your door for having raw milk, for buying vegetables at a stand, for growing vegetables in your front yard, for practicing one of your rights that shall not be infringed. This is a guy that enforces free speech zones. This is a guy that violates your Chapter 5, Article 67 rights of the North Korean Constitution to have freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, demonstration, and all that other stuff. And yes, that is in the North Korean Constitution. It's almost word for word what the First Amendment is. And guess what? North Koreans feel about it the same way that the U.S. government feels about it, or the local government, or the state government. They don't care. It's words on paper. The only way to solve this problem is to end it. Get rid of government cops, get rid of government law enforcement and women, and get security and protection. And because people are beholden to the ones that are actually employing them, which is not you, in the situation of cops, we get private security and protection because they will obey their employers. And that would be you.
Strong, powerful words from our friend Lusander, and I agree with all of it.
You can't mend it, just end it. Michigan Peace and Liberty Fest this weekend. Come on out, miplc.org. Have a good time.
Worms.
And bacon.
Worms. Lots.
Did I mention bacon?
Bacon. Mmm. Bring in the assault kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Thanks for having me.
And you'll be broadcasting live on Sunday, right?
So long as the magic of the internet keeps up, it will happen.
Cool. I'll be there talking to you. Worms.
Worms.